Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9.5 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 6th. Credit card companies faced congressional criticism this week for raising interest rates on consumers with declining credit ratings, even if those consumers pay their credit card bills on time. We are going to talk for the first half of this program about how the credit card industry pushes many consumers deeper into debt. And we will wonder if you think there ought to be a law. Senator Carl Levin says even customers who consistently pay on time are getting whacked by credit card issuers that raise such rates without an adequate warning or a clear notice. He's holding out the club of possible legislation to spur voluntary changes by the industry. At this hearing on Tuesday, one woman told his subcommittee that her credit card rate nearly tripled without adequate notice and that issuers send deliberately misleading and confusing information. In some cases, just opening another account, such as a department store credit card, could trigger the downgrade in credit score, leading to higher rates. So, do you have a credit card horror story? Do you think that the credit card industry needs to be regulated more? We welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Robert Manning, a research professor and director of the Center for Consumer Financial Services and past Caroline Werner Gannett Chair of the Humanities at the Rochester Institute of Technology. He is the author of Credit Card Nation and joins us by telephone. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be joining you, Joy.
So what did you make of this hearing on Tuesday? Was anything accomplished?
Well, of course, the industry is becoming under more and more scrutiny, particularly in terms of what we've known for quite some time about the declining underwriting standards in its mortgage lending division. And what we're seeing and what we're going to hear even more horror stories of is because credit cards are the most profitable product that is offered by the major banks, and keep in mind the top 10 banks control over 3/4 of the market and top 10 issuers control over 90% of the market. There's not nearly the competition that they say there is, and that they'll be squeezing credit card holders even more to make up for the losses that they're feeling right now in their other lending and underwriting divisions.
Yeah. So, what is the explanation for this? For example, this woman who said that she was paying on time and the minimum payment, and then her interest rate triples without any notice.
Well, the credit card industry discusses what they refer to as their risk assessment model, that they have to have flexibility. That revolving credit is a very different kind of lending product because it's not a secured loan. And that they have to be able to make adjustments based on their perception of the changing risk of a loan to a consumer, since they can't recall some particular asset to protect their loan. But, of course, keep in mind that this is an industry now that rakes in over $16 billion a year just in fees associated with over-limit, late, and cash advance fees to your credit card. It's also the only lending product that major banks offer, that they don't have to honor the terms of an agreement that they offer to the credit card consumer. So keep in mind that when these interest rates change, it's not just the future charges that the interest rate's been tripled on, but it's also retroactive to the existing balance that a consumer has. And, of course, it's grossly unfair that these changes can occur with as little as 30 to 45-day notice.
Yeah, and if this woman, too, was saying that she then started tallying up what she was paying every month. The hike in the interest rate hiked this minimum payment, and she was paying thousands and thousands of dollars just on the interest rate.
Well, I mean, that's the key here, is that the bank is very carefully filtering to its system those people that they recognize in their risk assessment models that have so little credit available to them. In other words, they've maxed out their lines of credit, but they're basically fee harvesting or generating the highest level of revenues in terms of higher interest rates on those specific customers. I mean, when you look at what's unique about the credit card industry, approximately 40% of accounts do not carry a balance. They're convenience users. So that means that approximately 20 to 25% of the credit card account holders generate over 70% of the fee and interest revenues for the industry. So that means that they have to squeeze that one quarter of their account holders ever so hard to make up for the 40% of account holders that they may actually lose money on.
Yeah. Now, the credit card company executives who were at this hearing defended this practice of using a customer's credit score to determine how much interest to charge, because they say they have to be, you know, they have to be accountable to their stakeholders and their business and et cetera. And so what do you make of their defense?
Well, it's pretty hard to defend when you're talking about the same scoring system that's been used in terms of their mortgage underwriting policies that's led to, you know, ultimately over $200 billion in subprime mortgage lending losses. So, you know, you're looking at the same scoring system that has failed profoundly in some other areas of their lending divisions. And then here they're saying that they have to use it when they're dealing with revolving lines of credit with consumers' use of credit cards. I mean, this is a scoring system that's been designed and certainly calibrated to generate the highest fees and interest rates for the credit card industry, not necessarily to calibrate the best understanding of the cost of credit from the consumer side. So these are justifications that the industry has used quite some time. And what is most disconcerting is that in many ways, this is a black box. The FICO score, these are proprietary algorithms, which means that they're secret. And it means that people really don't understand what is the basis of how these scores are created. In our movie, In Debt We Trust, which is a documentary on the deregulation of the banking industry, which we released last spring, we go over and show how consumers have lost so much control over the information that banks use that are supposedly increasing the accuracy of their underwriting standards, and yet ultimately they're used as a justification simply to increase the cost of credit.
Yeah, we're going to go to phones in just a moment. Our lines are filling up here. Do you expect to see Congress regulate the credit card industry, or do you expect that the credit card industry will do things voluntarily?
Well, it's very clear, as somebody who's testified to Congress over the last 10 years, that when more heat is being generated on the industry, given how profitable it is and how it essentially subsidizes other aspects of the major conglomerate banks, that they do back down. I mean, clearly, it's almost impossible to defend the universal default provision, which means that the banks do not honor the terms of the contract that they initially offer consumers, and that they will back down if Congress threatens legislation. But the reality of it is, given the nature that the banking committee in the Senate side and the House Financial Services on the House side are so heavily packed and weighted in the favor of banking interests, that it's almost impossible to see major legislation being passed in the near term. And I say that as somebody who 4 years ago implored the Senate Banking Committee to hold hearings on securitization as it relates to mortgage lending and couldn't get to the first step of even holding hearings on that topic, which today has led to a very perilous position of the American economy with the subprime lending crisis.
We are talking about credit card practices and credit card debt. Americans weighed down by some $900 billion in credit card debt, an average of $2,200 per household. And now Congress investigating some of the practices employed by credit card companies, held a hearing this week. And we are talking about what some of the problems are and maybe what some of the answers are. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your question for our guest or your credit card horror story. Robert Manning is a research professor and director of the Center for Consumer Financial Services at the Rochester Institute of Technology and is the author of Credit Card Nation. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we welcome in Lou Dobbs, CNN personality, a host, and author of many books. His latest is Independence Day, Awakening the American Spirit. Lou Dobbs joins us after 8:30. So 10 minutes or so for you to talk about credit cards and credit card debt and credit card industry practices that might be unfair. Our guest, Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation, and our first caller is Claire in La Crosse. Hi, Claire. You're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, I was having a situation where my credit was okay, but I lost my job at the end of the year and was making payments, but they were minimal payments, like 100, and my credit at this particular company was about $5,000 at the time. And suddenly, my interest rate this summer went from 10% to 33.8%.
Wow.
And I was shocked, but fortunately that was the impetus for me to get going on getting my credit together, and it's really, I was just shocked because my credit rating was like 765, so
yeah,
it wasn't triggered by my credit rating, it was triggered by late payments.
Oh, all right, so then, I don't know, you don't blame the credit card company for that, or do you?
Well, I didn't get any notice about it. It just went, and I called them one day, and they said, apparently we've made a mistake. We'll knock it down to 18% for you. But It had gone from 10 to 33 without any notice.
Yeah, yeah. What about that, Robert Manning?
Well, I mean, that's really the problem of the industry, is that whenever they're being essentially caught accountable for raising interest rates beyond what's acceptable in most lending practices, they say, oh, we've made a mistake, and it's the responsibility of the consumer that we can basically price gouge, and it's not price gouging unless the consumer complains. And unfortunately, most people who are in financial distress and coping with job loss or medical problems or other family issues, the last thing they need to do is to challenge a bank representative and say, why are you charging me such an outrageous level of interest without giving me proper notification? They've got other more serious problems, and in the process, the banks are just reaping higher profits dealing with the personal distress of their customers.
Yeah. A spokesman for Bank of America at this hearing on Tuesday, this congressional hearing, says its customers have the right to say no to an increase.
Well, of course the customer has the right to say no, but what happens in a situation where they've filtered people who are in clearly, they understand they're in financial difficulty and they have the least amount of competitive advantage to shop around, and knowing that notification may not even be recognized for a few payment statements, in the worst-case scenario, they've tripled the interest rate, made very high profits over that period of time, and it's a no-lose situation for the bank, for the customer to beware that the relationship with that bank now is really making sure that they don't get ripped off.
Yeah, so what, though, is the answer here? The Bank of America, or these credit card banks are supposed to just keep interest rates the way they are, even if somebody might be a high-risk cardholder?
Well, I mean, the key is here is that there needs to be some transparency with the lenders. They need to really explain that if a person has been late, does that really mean that there's a likelihood that the default rate would lead to having to raise the interest rate by 15 or 20 points, that would justify the higher rate of risk? I mean, they're just simply saying, gosh, this person lost their job and they're late on their payments, so now we've raised the rate beyond what used to be considered the usury cap for that state.
Yeah. Jim in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Good morning. I wonder, lost my job, and then I ended up in the hospital, and finally I went after and accumulated some credit card debt, and then I went on Social Security. Can the credit card companies come after your Social Security if you, I don't really have any other assets. I don't know if this is a question your guest can answer.
Well, actually, we're seeing this happen more and more. Can they go after your Social Security? They do. Is it legal? No. But what will happen now, particularly in the information age, and the fact is that other member banks want to essentially extend a courtesy to other banks who are looking to collect on their existing debts. So what we're seeing is a real problem where people on Social Security and fixed income and public assistance are finding that their accounts have been frozen and that their Social Security payments have essentially been debited for payments or past due amounts to the credit card companies. So, no, it's not legal, but yes, it is a growing concern and a growing problem.
Phil in Antigo is with us now. Hi, Phil.
Good morning. Just a few comments. The problem really, that your approach to the problem is myopic, and what I mean is subsequent to the bank collapse and the Depression, we had laws prohibiting interstate banking. Back in the 70s and 80s, when banks were pushing for interstate banking, they also pushed to abolish usury laws across the country. The usury rate in Wisconsin was 12%. Anything charged above that was a crime and was usually run by the mob and called juice money. What we need, and this is a perfect example of what you get when you don't have publicly financed election campaigns, with banks putting so much money into the pockets of senators and representatives, they caved in and abolished. They didn't establish a different usury rate. They didn't establish a uniform usury rate across the country. They abolished state usury rates across the country and let banks charge whatever they want.
Yeah. So should we need to bring back these national usury laws, Robert Manning?
Well, actually, they did eliminate the state usury laws. What happened was is that nationally chartered banks no longer had to adhere to the rules that states mandated in terms of usury laws. So certainly state chartered banks still have to respect those usury laws. But what happened after 1978 was that banks, nationally chartered banks, could move to any state they wanted, and they could essentially use that state's interest rate laws and export them across the country. So states that didn't have interest rate caps, then we see the companies opening their headquarters in Delaware and Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and then they essentially don't have to have any restrictions on the rates that they can charge. So clearly what the banks have done is orchestrated a system where there is no limit on the interest rates or on the fees that they can offer consumers. And now consumers recognize with only five major credit card issuers that there just aren't the options they thought there were. There are 6,000 credit cards that are being issued across the country, but they're controlled by really 10 major banks. And that's why we're seeing these sharp increases in the fee structure and the interest rates that are being charged, and so much less competition than one would expect.
Yeah. And one last call for you, Scott in Onalaska. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Just wondering, and I have done this in the past, is you can, if you're in reasonably good standing with your credit card companies, you can call and request a rate drop, and sometimes they do it, or else you can maybe move to a different credit card where there's a lower rate. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but I seem to recall that I did this several years back one time.
Yeah, you can do that if you're in good standing, Robert Manning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the fact that the banks can raise it without telling you means that they don't want to lose a customer that's generating a lot of revenue for them. The problem is, of course, is the disclosure policy for those people that are most in need of credit and find themselves so desperate for credit that they accept whatever terms the banks offer, or they're just not knowledgeable and understand that the terms of their contract has been changed. They haven't received their next payment statement, and so they're completely oblivious of the fact that their interest rate might have tripled over a very short period of time.
Yeah, so we're going to let you go and welcome in Lou Dobbs in just a moment. You're you foresee what happening on this issue following the congressional hearing this week?
Well, I don't see any major changes, but I clearly see that a recession is on the horizon, and that the subprime crisis is going to deepen in the middle class, and that we're going to see more and more concerns about social justice issues relating to the cost of credit.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Robert Manning, a research professor and director of the Center for Consumer Financial Services at the Rochester Institute of Technology, author of Credit Card Nation. We thank him for being with us. We are going to be welcoming in Lou Dobbs in just a moment. He is author of Independence Day, Awakening the American Spirit. We welcome your questions for Lou Dobbs at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.